Right, well, do you think that the breakdown of the private welfare state is going to motivate the unions and politicians more to push for a single payer system, or has the Obamacare situation bought off the pressure?
Well, I think it is contradictory. I think certainly the greatest potential for going beyond the Affordable Care Act exists at the local level. I was just up in the great state of Vermont, where they're involved in a very difficult 3-4 year process to try to introduce in one state tax.
KBOO Community Radio and Sante Aesthetics and Wellness are proud to co-sponsor A Touch of Portland 2014. The event takes place Sunday, September 7th, and is a great way to detox after a long summer. Whether you're getting back from Labor Day weekend or decompressing from the burn, this is a great way to stay healthy through dance, foods, and multiple healing modalities. That's A Touch of Portland, Sunday, September 7th at Northwest 17th and Davis. Go to kboo.fm/touchofportland for more information on this event.
The time is 6 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This coming up next on KBOO is Labor Radio. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 41 years of American arts and crafts. Freshly prepared food with an international flavor and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 1st through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Hello there. Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio here on KBOO, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. Holla! My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. I am a member of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees and the current president of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. As usual, I'm joined today by my co-host.
Hi, I'm Deborah Hall with the American Federation of Teachers and also the president for the Classified Union at Portland Community College, and we are celebrating our one-year anniversary on Labor Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, I'm Audrey Terrell. I'm retired international representative from the United Auto Workers in Detroit, and I'm the current president of the Portland NAACP.
Well, tonight we have a special guest. As you know, today is Labor Day, and so not only is this our first year anniversary, we're real excited about it, but we're real excited also that tonight our guest is Tom Chamberlain. He is the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO.
Well, good morning and good afternoon, and thank you so much for having me join you on such a special day. 1 year, that's quite dedication. It takes a lot to put one of these shows on. So good for you and good for Portland.
Thank you.
Having the opportunity to listen to you every Sunday.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been kind of a challenge. We've never been in this business before, and we found that we've grown to like it.
Good.
And so what we like is being able to talk to our listeners about the various things that are happening on the labor front in the black community here in Portland. So again, thanks a lot, and thank you so much again for being here today. You had a long, hot, hard day out at Oaks Park. So tell us about what was going on today.
Oaks Park, I don't think a lot of folks in Portland understand that Oaks Park is perhaps the largest Labor Day picnic west of the Mississippi. I think they had about 16,500 people there. It was packed.
I'd say about that, yeah.
And it tends to be during the kickoff to the election season. So we had everyone from U.S. senators like Jeff Merkley and the governor, the speaker of the Oregon House and the majority leader in the Senate. I mean, it was... if you were an elected leader and a progressive leader, and if you believe in workers, that was a place you had to be. And mm-hmm. I have to tell you, oftentimes they don't get a big crowd listening. This year, they were listening. There was a big crowd in front of that that stage.
Yeah, when I came in today, I mean, people seem to be pretty riveted with the speakers today, listening to what they have to say, because everybody has a buy-in with the election coming up in November.
They do, and I think people are tired of hearing the same old stuff. You know, I think they're really interested in hearing where the candidates stand on minimum wage and retirement security and wage equality and how they're going to close the gap in wages between those who seem to have everything and the rest of us. Mm-hmm. They call it a fair shot agenda, you know, and how you educate your kids and how they, you know, they're not going to be in debt for the rest of their lives exactly. when they get out of college. So I think people are more tuned into this election than I think the folks in the media are giving them credit for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit about Labor Day. Where are the origins of Labor Day?
Well, it depends on what you read. And this morning I got up and read a lot. There was a Haymarket massacre back in the mid-1800s. Some track it back to them. May Day actually was a very important day to workers in the United States. It was International Workers' Day. And in fact, the first International Workers' Day was May Day, 1890. And the first president of the AFL, who was an immigrant and a Jew, called for a national day of action to bring attention to what they called the progressive agenda, the eight-hour day, giving women the right to vote, child labor laws. And that call for action coincided with actions that were occurring in Europe. And on May Day of 1890, in London, 250,000 marched. In Paris, 100,000 marched. Wow. In New York, 50,000 marched.
Nice.
And they marched in Detroit and Chicago. And in the small town of Louisville, Kentucky, 6,000 gathered to hear Sam Gompers speak. And he started, and he had 6,000 in front of him and asked a simple question. He asked, what does labor want? We want more schoolhouses and less jails, more books, less arsenals, more learning and less vice, more leisure and less greed, more justice and less revenge. And to me, that's what Labor Day is about. To me, Labor Day is remembering, you know, Mother Jones and Dr. King marching in Memphis and Cesar Chavez. To me, I conjures up a vision of him standing on the back of a pickup, inspiring workers. To me, it's about how we move forward as a movement when billionaires and millionaires are doing everything in their power to stop us. And Oregon, and I'm talking too much, I apologize, I should have
ask the question.
Go ahead. But to me, it's, you know, the parallel between what's happening in America today and 1890 is so riveting. In the 1890s, you had the robber barons who controlled everything. They controlled the election. There was no income tax. There was no government regulations. Kids went to work every day, and their profits were astronomical. And they could pump as much money into elections as they wanted to, and they did. And today we have the Koch brothers, and they're bought and paid for candidates like Monica Wiebe, you know, and the list goes on. They're trying to take us down. They're trying to stop what has occurred since that day, that spring day in Louisville to today. They want to roll back labor law. They want to roll back Social Security. They want to roll back worker protections. They don't want you to have earned sick days. It's their agenda. It's less government and more exploitation of workers. And
they want to roll back every single thing we've earned, every single thing.
That's right. Yes. That's right,
yes.
Deborah.
No, I was just going to say that speech sounded like it could have been read today. The things that the subject matters that you were given, oh my God, is so relevant today.
Yeah.
We're still fighting for those very same things. And I tell you, union, it's so important to be a part of a union, a member of a union today.
Today. And what people have to understand is the union movement today isn't the union movement it was 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be.
Right.
We can't be just about our members. Our roots our roots, if our roots are in community, our roots are is moving a collective agenda, like that progressive agenda I talked about earlier, where folks can coalesce around and organize around and move it. You know, in labor's history, we have to recognize the good times and the bad times. The good times in the 1890s, when we had the highest immigration in this country ever, 15% of our population were foreign born, highest ever. They were the core of the workers' movement, yep. Right? Okay. So in the 1890s, we embraced everybody. And then if you follow labor history, you know that in the 1820s, they got a little cloistered, right? You got to have the right job. You got to be the right color. And then there was a change, and the CIO brought more folks of color in, and we started organizing folks in factories. And we changed. And because we changed, we survived. We can't turn our... We have to embrace everybody. Foreign-born, native-born,
yes.
Whoever you love, who you don't love, whether you go to church or not, people are people, and our issues are the same. And we have to... And I think we are, I think President Trump at the last convention move forward an agenda that embraces a new type of labor movement. And if we can move forward with that agenda, we're going to be stronger in 10 years than we are today.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit more about that agenda?
Sure. Sponsoring and advocating that constituency groups, which are groups that represents folks of color and LGBTQ folks and Latinos and Pacific Asianers and women, to give them a voice on our boards at and part of the governance structure of the AFL. Important step. It's also an important step to realize that all the issues we care about aren't just wages, hours, and working conditions. And an opportunity to work with the Urban League and the community and the Ban the Box campaign or the Fair Chance campaign, which simply says, you know, if you're an ex-offender, you shouldn't be axed right out of the chute if you've committed a crime of any sort. You know, mm-hmm. you should be asked that at the end of the process.
Right.
Let's give everybody a chance.
Yes.
And too often, yes. They use this box, this, offender box, as a way to just get that pool of applications smaller. Mm-hmm. No rhyme, no reason. You just check the wrong box. And guess what? You're not going to get a good job. We had a town hall. What really drove it home to me, we had a town hall with the Urban League and some community groups and some community justice organizations about 5 weeks ago. And I sat next to a woman who'd been out of prison for 10 years. And she says, I haven't had anything but an entry-level job for 10 years. She said, I'm a mom. And when my child misbehaves, you know, I might give them a timeout. I might give them, you know, some type of discipline, mm-hmm. and then see if that corrects the behavior. But I don't keep giving them a timeout.
Right.
And if you've been in the system, you're punished every single day. You're not given a chance. And guess what? Data shows if you don't have a job, if you don't have housing, you're a correction officer,
right.
Tina, you know, they're
right.
going to offend again.
Right.
We're setting them up for failure.
That's right.
So those are, mass incarceration should be a big issue for the labor movement, mm-hmm. because those are workers.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. And so those are some of the things we're looking at. Minimum wage, that's a huge issue for okay. us, though most of our members, you know, they work above the minimum wage. But we can't have a minimum wage in this country. And I know there's a lot of folks, including Richardson, running for governor, and Dr. Wybie, who don't believe in the minimum wage. But you know what? We shouldn't have wages in this country where you work every day, you play by the rules, and you're still in poverty.
Right.
A minimum wage that puts you in that situation mm-hmm. isn't fair, and let's say, call it like it is, it's corporate welfare.
Exactly.
Yes.
So we're looking more for not just increasing the minimum wage, but making sure that people have a living wage?
A living wage.
So that they can take care of their families.
That's right, Tina. Mm-hmm. We got to bring everybody up. Because if we don't bring everybody up, they're going to drag us down. You see what's happening right
yes.
now. If you're
yes.
a public employee, if you have a union job, if you're a UAW member,
yes,
and you're trying to get the folks out of the mess they were in 2008, you're vilified instead of being mm-hmm. a hero because right. you help the auto yes. industry get out mm-hmm. of the mess.
Yes.
Over and over and over, you know, the corporate bought and paid for media, they play on that, right? They play on that. Oh, they're only out about their members. They don't care about you. But you know what? We do care about all workers, mm-hmm. and we got to show it.
Yes.
So I'd like to take the moment and remind our listeners, if you just tuned in, this is the labor segment for the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio here on KABU, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. And tonight, our guest is Tom Chamberlain, hot off of the trail at Oaks Park today, having to shake thousands of hands. In addition to furrying around candidates to make sure that our members were able to talk to them about what their issues were.
It's the most tiring day of the year, and it's the best day of the year.
Yes.
And Northwest Labor Council does a great job yes. every year putting that picnic on. Oftentimes, we get the credit for it, the AFL. We don't do it. It's the Northwest Labor Council, and what a job they do.
Oh, great.
No, I was just listening to you speaking because I was there in Detroit working on staff when the auto industry was having problems, and General Motors was going to file bankruptcy and Ford and Chrysler was going to follow.
Right.
But to see the workers and how we would constantly go into negotiations with General Motors, trying to find ways of how to rectify this. We even lowered the pay scale. Just so we can keep people working. But now it's on the rebound. I talk with Detroit frequently, former retirees from the staff, and how it's coming back. It's coming back slow, but it's a process. It's coming back. But the union plays a vital role. And what she was talking about, the living wage, just to live.
Right.
And from that, you've got, well, our issue is this prison system. How so many people, well, if they had jobs, then they wouldn't commit these crimes, you know, young folks and whoever else. But I'm saying we play such an important role in the livelihood, the whole gamut of society, and building that. And they used to say that the unions have developed the middle class. We had the middle class. But it's just being able to live and survive in this country. I think a lot of crime would go down if people had jobs.
Right.
Jobs.
Well, middle class is the goal.
Yes.
The middle class is the goal. We're the journey. We're trying to get folks to the middle class. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are falling out of the middle class. And
yes.
I, just going back to the auto workers, I followed that in 2007 and 2008 mm-hmm. Really closely. And what I saw was the creativity from the union, you know, investing your pension funds and,
yes.
and taking pay cuts and being smart.
Yes.
Here's what's happening. What you brought was expertise, not only on how to negotiate, not only how to get things back on track, but the expertise from the shop floor.
Yes.
And those companies that don't tap into that, those companies that don't ask to get a view from through the workers' eyes,
right.
they'll never reach their full potential.
Well, that situation affected so many people. And so many, not only just wage earners, but the people, the whole city,
yes.
cities, all across the country. So, you know, the union plays such a vital role in tapping into the mindset of people, as you said.
Right.
But it's starting to rebound. It's coming back. And thanks to President Obama was able to save right. General Motors, things are starting to come back. As I talk to people, General Motors is starting to hire more, Chrysler definitely is hiring more, and Ford. So it's coming back. But what if we just gave up the fight? What if we had not just continued to try to negotiate, talk to the people? So many General Motors people have lost their medical just so they can be working, because now they may be retired and they're still paying for medical. But I'm just saying, those are the things the union brings so much to the table for the livelihoods of families and children going to college and
right.
and just livelihood, and then lowering the crime rate, because people want to work. I believe people want to work if you give them a job.
People want to work. People want to be productive. People want to feel valued.
Yes.
I mean, they want to work hard.
They yes. do want to work, and they want to contribute. And another thing for me that I feel that the union has done, not only economically, but as a minority person in this country, and as we're seeing Ferguson, Missouri going crazy, the justice. You know, because quite honestly, and I'm going to say to this to my, you know, to our listeners out there of color, of whatever color, you know, sometimes you get in a situation and you call law enforcement and the situation escalates. I feel that my union has given me not only a seat, I'm at the table economically and I can hold my head up, but also to be able to learn how to fight for justice and to fight for other folks and to have someplace when I get in trouble to help me, because I don't maybe necessarily think to call law enforcement because as I stated, situations can go awry. And so I think we don't talk about those things enough, what the union really does, what the union for the folks that are kind of off the grid, mm-hmm. as it were, mm-hmm. you know. And then another thing for folks that aren't in a union and for business owners, if we lose our jobs, how can we buy the stuff in your stores? And so you lose out when we lose out because we all support each other. And it's like a house of cards. And so you may hate unions, but if the union mill shuts down, your business is going out too because they can't afford to buy what's on your shelf. So how can we support and bring each other up?
Right. And, you know, folks who don't support unions come in all shapes and sizes. I mean, we have, in respect of General Motors, we have some Cadillac liberals out there that, you know, they say the right things when they get elected, but when it comes right down to it, they don't vote worker issues. Mm-hmm. They don't yep. understand. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important to have folks like Jeff Merkley and the governor and Rob Nose. AFT member who was just elected to the Oregon House, and more union folks are stepping up because they bring this unique perspective. They're more apt to understand the plight of folks who are less fortunate because they themselves might have been in that situation. Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk just a second about Harris v. Quinn, because I think it gives a unique perspective on what a union can do for a group of workers. My son was injured, and he relies on a caregiver every morning to get him up, right? Every morning that caregiver comes in, and he relies on that caregiver for the meds, his personal grooming, everything, sometimes even taking him back and forth to the doctor. I know, talking to these caregivers, not only for my son, but with SEIU, mm-hmm. some of the ones, joining a union, yes, it increased their wages. Yes, it gave him better benefits, but it also did? It increased their training. They're a more professional group because the union wanted more training.
Exactly.
And because they wanted more training, because they have a higher professional level of expertise, my son gets taken care of better.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they actually do minor medical techniques that they're qualified to do. So oftentimes we don't think of that when folks unionize, is that they'll become more professional. We see it in the building trades, that's for sure. Yes. We see it in the manufacturing floor, that's sure. for sure, and our nurses and our sure. firefighters.
Sure.
But we also see it in our child care workers, and we see it in our home health care workers when they're in a union and things evolve.
So, Tom, some of our listeners out there may not know what Harris versus Quinn is. Can you give them a brief update of exactly what that is?
If I'm allowed to give a little lead up. In this country, we live under a set of laws for labor that were established in 1935, when they passed the National Labor Relations Act. And the only time that law has significantly been changed was in 1947, when they passed a piece of legislation called Taft-Hartley, which took away rights from union workers. It didn't give us any new rights. It actually took them away. But what we're trying to do in the labor movement is to create a union movement that reflects the economy. And the economy today isn't, thank goodness, that disabled folks are in institutions, they're at home.
Right.
And so you have this whole rise of this whole new workforce called home healthcare workers, and AFSCME and SEIU and I think CWA and AFT in some cases have organized these workers by the tens of thousands across the United States. Mm-hmm. Well, that frightens those folks like the Chamber of Commerce and others who don't want strong unions in this country. Right. And so they challenged their right to have automatic payroll deduction. automatic payroll deduction. What they wanted is, I call it freeloader legislation, which means that the union has to represent you, but you don't have to pay it. Mm-hmm. So I went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the freeloaders argument. And in certain states, I believe Oregon's one of them, folks don't have to pay union dues. They get all those services, but they don't have to pay their union dues. Mm-hmm. And you see that oftentimes. When labor tries to get in front, they try to be creative. They try to do the right thing. They try to help low-pay workers, low-wage workers. You'll see a pushback. Sometimes we lose. Sometimes we win. I would not call Harris v. Quinn a total loss, because what I saw was very interesting. What I saw was those unions that had home health care workers and child care workers start going out and internal organizing, mm-hmm. Talking to them, going to their homes. And so the impact hasn't been, at least in Oregon, what the folks who want to destroy the union movement wanted.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically has taken us back to our grassroots.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Let me just say this, as you were talking about, because I'm a UAW, United Auto Workers, and my last few years before I retired, we had just, because it has been a decline in auto workers, but our increase in membership have been with healthcare workers, mm-hmm. correctional officers, mm-hmm. bankers, credit union, just a variety of non-auto workers. Right. So we often, and it's so wonderful to talk to you, you remind me of working on staff, that it's United All Workers. Just United All Workers, because people are realizing how they can have that support system, that structure, to be able to be working and have an oversight, someone to oversight their rights.
That's right.
Not only their wages, their rights.
And what you all are doing, the UAW is doing in the Volkswagen plant down in Tennessee.
Yeah.
That's my favorite saying right now is, act like a union. Whether you're a union or not, and you're workers in your workplace, mm-hmm. act like a union. And mm-hmm. that's exactly what's happened down at the VW plant in Tennessee. I think it's so exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The movement is growing. I was just recently at the American Federation of Teachers convention last month, and AFT has grown. AFSCME has also grown, has added members. And so while folks think that the union movement is dying, I think people are, workers, are seeing having a voice is good, and it does something. And I want that, and I need that. So, and with that, here's the last little bit of history for our Labor Day shout out today. In 1898, Samuel Gompers, head of the American Federation of Labor, called it the day for which toilers in past centuries looked forward, when their rights and their wrongs would be discussed, that the workers of our day may not only lay down their tools of labor for a holiday, but upon which they may touch shoulders in marching flanks and feel stronger for it. With that, in 1887, Oregon became the first state, yes, our state Oregon, became the first state to designate Labor Day as a holiday. And in 1894, Congress designated the first Monday in September a legal holiday for all federal employees and the residents of the District of Columbia. And so, with that, Labor Day, come on, you guys, embrace it. It's our day.
So, yes. Tom, again, we'd like to thank you for joining in with us on this crowning glory day for labor workers. Thank you for giving us a wonderful, rich history about the labor movement, and reminding our people out there that if they don't get out there and vote, if they don't pay attention to the candidates out there, if they leave their destiny in someone else's hand, then they're going to end up in a place that they really don't want to be.
That's
in.
Right.
So, Sister Audrey, you have some closing remarks for us?
Just want to make an announcement that the NAACP will regular meetings of the second Saturday and the fourth Saturday of every month at the Concordia University Library. And I do want to make a quick announcement from regarding the Justice for Youth, sponsored by the Partnership for Safety and Justice, on Saturday, September 13th at 12 noon at the Pioneer Courthouse Square. The NAACP, we're forming a youth rally, and so we're excited about sharing that with everyone this evening.
And then finally, I'd also want to thank Tom again and the Oregon AFL-CIO for giving us the Oregon CBTU this opportunity to host this show and encouraging us to step up and to embrace and to start organizing and to get our members active. Thank you very much for that.
So, Tom, you want to tell our listeners how they can check in with the AFL-CIO here in Oregon?
This is a really important election. It's us against the Koch brothers. It's us against the 1%. Go to our website. You can put in Oregon AFL-CIO. That'll get you there. Or www.oraflcio.org.
So in closing, I'd like to remind you of two announcements. There's a Lupus Walk this Saturday, actually September 9th. It's at Waterfront Park. It's really important for people to get out there. And also the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. We meet on the second Tuesday of every month, 6 p.m. at the American Federation of State County Municipal Employee William Lucy Building, located at 6025 East Burnside, Portland. Please come join us on September 9th. Again, thank you very much on this crowning day for labor. Holla.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KIBU is preparing for our legendary book and record sale happening on Sunday, September 14th at the Volunteers of America building, 537 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. We're accepting donations of books, comics, LPs, CDs, DVDs, VHS, and cassette tapes, and all donations are tax deductible. Your discards are another person's treasure, and all sales benefit your community radio station, KBOO. So bring those donations down.